This session is entitled Growing Through Transitions in Ministry Leadership with Pastor Dave Delaney. Pastor Delaney has pastored Shawnee Baptist Church since December 2009 and is the author of multiple books, including Who Needs a Superhero? I'm a Youth Pastor, Loving the Lost, and Stormproof. This session is part of the Spiritual Leadership Conference 2011. Spiritual Leadership Conference is a ministry of Lancaster Baptist Church and Dr. Paul Chappell.
In today's society, there is this increasing process of changes and transitions that happen. Jobs, economy, relationships, homes, families, parents, schools. It seems like everyone in some way, some shape, some form are all affected by a transition. And the last place that people think of a transition would be at the church. It's the place that's supposed to be secure and stable. There's a sense of security. We go to church and we have our pew. We go to church, we have our seat. We go to church, we have our ritual, our routine that we do. And if anybody gets in the way of that, you know, and that one person was sitting in my seat this morning, and I'm going to get them afterwards and let them know, you know. And we have routines. And it's a good thing to have a good routine when you go to church and to have that comfort zone that you can fall into at church. But what happens when that comfort zone at church isn't there? And that's where people begin to become uneasy. And I think when we talk about the idea of transitions or ministry transitions, the concern is not for the person who's transitioning out, and the concern is not for the person transitioning in. The concern is for the people who stay in the middle of that transition. You know, it's not for the pastor or youth pastor or a music leader who's stepping out or the one stepping in. It's for the choir member or the adult class or that teenager or the senior saint who feels like now their world is suddenly turned upside down. And what insecurities is that going to cause them in their life? And so what's the right way to maybe pass the baton as far as people and relationships with people go is really the concern. And so while it can be nerve-wracking and uneasy and maybe just plain terrifying, it is something that happens in the life of a church. And if you've pastored for any amount of time, you've experienced transitions, I'm sure, with staff members maybe transitioning on to a different place or transitioning up in ministry and having to bring in new people. And you know the concern that you have for that individual department. But maybe on a bigger scale, as a pastor, how do you transition out? And then as a pastor, how do you transition in? And making sure that those people are still okay and secure and stable and feel secure and strengthened and grown through the entire process. It's hard to understand the effects that a transition can take and a transition can have. It's hard to understand what one decision here or one decision there, how they can, in the long term, have large ramifications on your ministry. For example, think if your mother would have married the other guy she dated in college, right? And where would you have been at that point? You know, and so in ministry, it's just the same. Where and how does that affect us on each and every level? One author stated that there's basically three stages of a transition. He says there, and he begins it with the ending. And we'll talk about that here in just a little while. But then there's the ending followed by this period of confusion. And then after the period of confusion, it leads to a new beginning. And our goal today is to reduce the period of confusion. That's what we want to cut down on, because that's where people walk out the back door or get frustrated or feel like they don't count or they don't have a voice or can't trust the new voice that's come in. And so how do we reduce that period of confusion in the life or stage of a ministry and minimize the frustration or insecurities that take place because of a transition? So number one, the reasons for transitions. The reasons for transitions. Maybe just on the side of your notes, you might write, every transition begins with an ending. Every transition begins with an ending. And sometimes the mistake, especially that men transitioning in make, is they don't recognize that because you're transitioning in, someone else is transitioning out. And there is the ending of influence. There is the ending of service. There's maybe even the ending of a ministry per se. And as someone who's transitioning in, if that's you today, someone transitioning in, we need to be very cognizant of the fact that there have been relationships built, there have been loyalties given, there has been influence gained to that person who's now transitioning out, and it could almost be detrimental to your ministry moving forward if you don't take the time to recognize that there is an ending that's taking place. So someone's stepping down, someone's moving out, someone's moving on, or someone's slowing down. I talked to Brother Kingsbury back here. He said he's coming because he wants to know how to transition out of some stuff. And that's not the goal of the lesson today. I just want everybody to know that, okay? If you came looking to how to do less, we're not covering that, okay? That'll be in Brother Ermler's session later, okay? So it's not necessarily slowing down, but it is slowing down for someone or for a ministry, perhaps. And the reasons, the references for why a transition happens are innumerable, okay? And it needs to be done, and it has to be felt and led with the spirit that wants to honor Christ and that wants to bring God the glory. And we'll end on that here in just a moment. But let me give you a few things. How do we make safe transitions? That's the best way. For example, we would start with reasons for transitions would be your health. As Baptists, we have this nasty problem. The problem is we love to eat. And eat. And the sweeter it is, the better. The more of it we like, you can deep fry it longer, that's what we want. And so health reasons, health concerns, and what happens when you have a serious health concern? What happens to your church? Those are real concerns that if you're at the point where you're thinking, okay, it's getting there in my ministry, it's there at that point. I tell our church often, if I dropped dead tomorrow, they'll still have church on Sunday. As important as I think I am, they'll still meet. Now, hopefully it won't be the same, okay? And hopefully they won't all be happy. I mean, maybe someone would cry, one or two people at least. But what happens at that point? And we need to consider those things and take those things into consideration. So health concern or workload. You know, we all wear several different hats, okay? We're all there, okay? If you came here wanting to gripe about how much you have to do, I hope you've learned that we all doing way too much. And we all wear different hats. And one of the reasons for a ministry transition would be that someone feels overworked. Someone feels like they're constantly running on E. Those are good signs that there needs to be a transition happening. And if you're in the place where you're the leader of somebody who feels that, help them learn and realize that there needs to be a transition that takes place in their ministry. If you're there and you report to someone above you, then you need to talk to them. Be open, be honest. I mean, this is just way too much for me. And it can be work overload. But ultimately, the reason for growth or the reason for a transition should be growth and the glory of God. And that's that last note that you have there. It should be for growth and the glory of God. The greatest reason for transitioning is for God's glory. It's for God's glory. Sometimes a man can do so much in a ministry. We understand from the Word of God that certain people are gifted, and some you know, all men are created equal works for government, but it doesn't work in God's world. Okay, that's not God's economy. In God's economy, one servant has one talent, one servant has two talents, and one servant has five talents. And maybe you're sitting here today, you say, I'm a two-talent Christian, or I'm a two-talent leader. This is as far as I can take this. Then maybe a transition is best for you in your ministry. This is as far as I can lead this ministry. We need somebody who's much more qualified than I am. I would do really good with a choir of about two people. Anything above that, I'm unqualified to lead that choir. I can't play the piano. I don't read music. I just like to sing. I do really good in the shower. But other than that, you know, a transition is going to have to take place because I don't have the gifts to lead the choir of 500 people or 75 people or 10, really. So it's for the growth and for the glory of God. That ought to be the ultimate. That ought to be the ultimate deciding factor in why we transitions and why we have transitions. If it is for the glory of God, if it is for the glory of God, then it doesn't matter if it rises or falls. It'll do exactly what God wants it to do. You see, and sometimes what happens is we enter into a transition stage and we go, okay, we got this thing to 500. And so the guy who comes behind me, he's going to get this thing to 700. Well, what happens when it plummets in the first 3 years to 200? And if all we're focused on is just growth, it can't be just growth. But if all we're focused on is just growth and not the glory of God, well, then we have a real problem on our hands at that point. Because then it looks like we've made the wrong decision and this wasn't the right guy for the job and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And nothing could be further from the truth. John Phillips wrote and said, if it is of God, then it shall rise. And if it is not, and listen to the statement, it is best that it should collapse. It is best that it should collapse. Now that's a tough statement to say, and we swallow hard, especially when it comes to ministry on some of those things. But if it is of God, if it's for God, if it's God's, and if he wants to drop it to 100, so be it. It's God's. You know, that shouldn't be our goal, right? To walk into a ministry and drop it to 100. That's not the right mentality when you're entering that ministry. But if that's what God wants, so be it. Secondly, the responsibilities of transitioning. We live in a world where everything starts with a key, with a switch. We wanted to flip, and if it doesn't immediately start, we walk out, we kick the tire, we cuss, we spit on the car, you know, we yell, we scream, and then we try to figure it out as fast as we possibly can to make it work. But what happens in transitions and what happens with people is you can't just flip switches. It's not as easy as just turning the key. It doesn't happen that way. The loyalty that someone's given to one person in ministry for 30-something years, just with the flip of a switch and a new position or title or business card, it doesn't just happen overnight. It doesn't work that way. You know, and so now I'm transitioning in, and now I have the title pastor before my name, and I expect the same type of loyalty due to me that was given to my predecessor, Lonnie Mattingly, who'd been there for 37 years. Well, it's just not going to happen. You know, things and transitions don't happen just because we flip switches. All take time, take maturity, take a growth process. And what I've learned is that loyal people will be loyal people, and that disgruntled people will be disgruntled people, you know. And so when you first step in, all of a sudden the switch is flipped, and wow, see, everybody really loves me. Well, they do, because you haven't done anything yet, you know. Wait a couple months, and then they'll be mad at you too, you know. And so in transitioning, what you have to realize is that there are certain responsibilities and there are certain obligations on both sides of the transition. The ending, there's certain responsibilities, and with the beginning, there are certain responsibilities. And so let me give you a couple of them. Number one, identify your Timothy. Identify your Timothy. That's for the ending. If you're thinking, okay, I've got X amount of time and here's where I am, I gotta start identifying that person who's going to come behind me. Identify the person who's going to fill your shoes. Paul says, commit thou to faithful men who'll be able to teach others also. Find that guy. Prepare your key leadership for a transition like that. Prepare your people. Talk to, you know, the inner core, maybe your deacons or your key church leadership, and pull them aside and say, okay, here's where we're going with this thing. Here's what we're doing. Don't out of a tragedy allow your church to be caught flat-footed with a transition that they have to face now that you haven't given them any advice through, you haven't given them any counsel, you haven't nurtured and cared and guided and helped them through. And we all understand that God sets up who God wants to set up. We understand that, okay? And I'm not for dictatorial leadership. That's not what I'm advocating today. But there ought to be that guy or I almost said gal. Gal would not be correct, okay? That guy or guys, if there's maybe a couple options of people that you say, okay, if something were to happen to me or if this were to go bad, here's a couple people I have my eye on. You don't want to leave the ministry high and dry. And that's a mistake a lot of people make, is that they haven't prepared their people for whoever's come behind them. And so one of the responsibilities on the person transitioning out or ending is to prepare people, identify those people who are coming behind you and say, okay, this is the end goal I'd have for him, and this is where I see him ending up, and this is where I am here. And again, I'm not the expert here, but this is a process that I've really tried to work with. We bring staff in and we try to bring them in at a certain level and allow them to kind of work their way up into leadership, as opposed to just strong willing or strong fisting leadership. It's not really the iron fist. It doesn't really rule real well with people and relationships. So we bring them in on a smaller level and we try to work them up. But there are key men that say, okay, I'm bringing this guy in at this level, but here's where I want him to get to. And let him grow, let him mature, let the people develop that love and affection for him as he does mature into ministry. So identify your people. Then second, and kind of along the same line, is prepare. Prepare. And that's for both the man that's ending and transitioning out and for the one that's beginning and transitioning in, is you need to prepare. You need to work. There's nothing more detrimental than someone who hasn't prepared for what they're about to step into or step out of. Preparing not just yourself, but preparing your people. Preparing, if you're transitioning in, not just yourself, but your family, your wife, your kids. If that situation's correct, being prepared spiritually, being prepared educationally, academically, all those types of things. Being prepared, being well prepared to step into whatever spot you have. I read of one New York Giants player named Carl Banks. And the statistic was that I think 85% of NFL players, by the time they're done playing football, are declare bankruptcy. 85% of NFL players, 5 years after they play football, declare bankruptcy because they haven't prepared. They haven't done anything. And Carl Banks was one of the first to kind of plow the way. He got a degree while playing football. He got a degree in communications and made the transition over into broadcasting, into announcing. He was prepared. He was thinking, okay, I can't do this forever. And so since I can't clang heads with 300-pound men every weekend for the rest of my life, I've got to take some steps to prepare and secure my future. The same thing is true in ministry. The same thing is true in ministry. You hear the guy say, I want to be a youth pastor for the rest of my life. Well, that's great when you're 20 or 25. But when you're 45 and you can't stand teenagers, that's a real problem, you know? And you need to have prepared and done some things to get yourself ready for that type of transition in ministry. Then third, I'd say timing. Timing is critical. And I think there in your notes it says too early, not too early, not too late. The timing is critical. And sometimes this is in your control, and sometimes this isn't in your control. You know? I mean, sometimes there's a catastrophe or a tragedy or some type of horrible thing that's happened in the church, and it's just thrown on top of you. And other times it's okay, it's well thought out, it's well planned, it's well prepared. But timing, if you can, timing is critical in the life of a church. Being sure that everything is well mapped out, and being sure that everything is well thought through, and being sure that people are on board, and being sure that questions are answered and concerns are addressed and direction is set. And you don't want to enter something like that and people feel like they haven't had a say. People feel like they haven't been able to voice some sort of concern or question or maybe cause for doubt that they may have. And so timing is very critical. You know, it's kind of like the engagement. You've been around the couples, they get engaged, and you're like, oh, great, well, when's the date? And it's, you know, and it's in 2 years, you know. 3 summers from now, we're getting married. Like, okay, that won't last, you know. And then there's the other ones, and oh, great, when you're getting married? Well, we're headed over to Las Vegas right now, you know. Well, okay, that's not really the best way either, okay? There's that happy medium in there, and I don't know what it is for your ministry. It probably depends on size and probably depends on strength, maybe core. But I don't know where it is for you, but make sure that you've thought through the timing of the ordeal. How it happened for me was I walked into Brother Mattingly's office, and if you know Brother Mattingly, Brother Kingsbury does. I'm not for sure if anybody else does, but if you know Brother Mattingly at all, on Saturdays he didn't do anything on Saturdays. Saturdays is off day. You know, he shows up this Saturday morning, soul winning. He'll knock a few doors, and then he's done. You don't see him for the rest of the day. Now he expects you to be still doing all your stuff, but he's gone. You know, and he called me one Saturday afternoon. He said, "Hey, can you come by my office?" And thought that was rare. That was really weird. I thought I was getting fired, honestly. And so I go to his office, is completely concerned, and he laid out a plan for me, and he said, "You know, I've been watching." And when I originally had moved back to Louisville from Lancaster, and it's something that him and I had talked about, nothing in detail, but had talked about a time period of when he would be done. We didn't talk about what would happen when he did, but just when he would be done. And this was just a few years before that time frame had kind of come through. And I said, and he asked me, he said, I think I'd like for to present your name to the leadership of our church." And after I picked myself up off the floor and went and changed my britches, then I came back and said, "Okay, I need some time to pray about it and think about it." And took 2 weeks and prayed and fasted and talked to several different counselors. And I came back to him after that 2 week period and I said, "Okay, let's start it." Now, I feel like that's what God would have for Amanda and I, and obviously it's what you feel like God would have for you, and let's see where we go. And so he said, "Okay," and I said, but one thing I would ask is I'd like at least a little bit of time to be able to just shadow you for a little while and follow you and study. I grew up in the church. My family started attending Shawnee when I was in fifth grade, and so it wasn't that I was unfamiliar with the ministry or even unfamiliar with him. It was it's just at a different level. When you're looking at it this way and you're looking at it that way, I wanted to look at it that way for a little while. And he said, "Great." And I said, "I'm thinking about 2 years. What do you think?" And he said, "2 years, a two-year transition, that would be fantastic." That was in September. He told me that. And in December, they voted me in as pastor. And I'm still trying to figure out what happened in my 2 years. You see, it may just be the timing happens that way for you. And maybe that's how it happened for us. And it may be that you get the 2 years. It may be that you don't. I don't know. But that's between you as transitioning in and then you as transitioning out. And then obviously the people in the church. Next, finances. Finances. I'll give you the statement. I read this when preparing for this lesson. And I think that probably sums up everything I could say. Nothing educates like an invoice. Nothing educates like an invoice. And you want to leave your predecessor in the best possible light. And as the man transitioned out, you want to leave your successor the best possible situation. But nothing educates like an invoice. Those are things you can't hide. And you don't want to leave a mess. You don't want to leave a mess. And unfortunately, when you're beginning, when you're stepping into that situation, you're not really privy to see if it's all a mess yet, you know? It's not till you've been there for 3 months that you find out the church is in foreclosure, like Brother Chapel, right? I mean, nobody told you that in the interview process, and you know, your world was spinning. You didn't think to ask, you know. And so, don't leave all the chips on the table for the guy who's coming behind you to have to clean up this huge, huge mess. And obviously, you're not going to leave him $10 million sitting in a drawer. Okay, I'm not asking you that, but Let's be sure that when we're stepping out, that we're leaving things organized, planned, prepared, clean, clear, understandable, that there's not a question of integrity, that there's not a question of doubt, that there's not a concern there. Let's be sure that as we step out, we're not going, let the next guy figure it out. Who cares? You know, that's not the right way to leave either. And there's nothing more concerning to a church than the way finances are handled. Look at the first problem in the book of Acts. It has to do with money. Look at the second problem in the book of Acts. It has to do with the way that monies were handled. The Ananias and Sapphira, they were untruthful with their resources in giving, and they get judged. And then the the church comes to the apostles and they're questioning the way resources were getting handled and the widows were getting taken care of and the way the food was being distributed. And what are this? The apostles are like, okay, fine, you guys take care of it. You know, give it to you. I'll gladly give it to you. And so be sure that we're handling finances correctly. And if you're transitioning out, understand that you talk is cheap when the guy behind you is looking at the invoice. And when he's breaking down the diagram, talk is cheap at that point. And so be sure that you've done that. If you're the guy stepping in, realize that you need to create a lot of accountability with finances. A lot of accountability. There, the chairman of our deacons, Brother Ron Kendall, many of you know him. Brother Kendall has literally been a part of every financial meeting we've had. Everyone. He hasn't dictated them. He hasn't said no. He hasn't said yes. He sits in the meetings and he just listens. And I asked him to come. I want him there because I want him to be there when we're going through the books and I go, well, what is that? You know, I want him to know that I didn't know what that was before we got to this meeting. And now he knows what it is. And I want there to be open and honest communication all the way across the board. Then the next thing I'd say is to the guy transitioning out, let it go. Let it go. Now, what exactly are we letting go of? I could sum it up in one word. Influence. That's what you're letting go. You're letting go of influence. As you're transitioning out, and you're wanting this man to transition in behind you, what he needs to have a smooth transition, he needs influence. And if you are not letting go of the influence that you have, then he can't influence the way that he should. That's all the way across the board. That's music ministry, that's bus ministry, that's youth ministry, anything that there might be some type of transition. As you transition out, you have to let go of that influence. It's not your place anymore to say what song the choir sings. If you wanted to be able to say what song the choir sings, you should have stayed the choir director, right? There's a difference in possession and ownership. Ownership is what we want people to take. Ownership and, hey, I'm giving this to you and putting the ball in your hands and take it and run with it as far as you possibly can. But ownership, when it gets down to the end, if the guy who gave them the ball says, give it back, ownership says, okay, now what? Possession says, I'm keeping this. I'm not letting it go. And that's my ministry. And this is, that's being possessive of what has been entrusted to you. And so if you say, I feel like God's transitioning me out, I feel like there's an end that's happening, what you're saying is, letting go. I'm letting go. I'm giving the influence over to you. Into this guy. And thank the Lord I haven't had that battle. Several friends of mine have. And I would warn you, if you're transitioning out, just let go of the influence. The best thing Brother Mattingly did for me when he stepped down was he disappeared for about 8 months. He called, we wrote, him and I grabbed meals, but he didn't attend one service, he didn't conduct one funeral, he didn't step into one wedding, he was just gone. He was gone. Is it because I didn't love him? No, I completely love him. He's like a grandfather to me. Is it because our church didn't love him? No, our church loves him very much. We take very good care of Brother Manley. But he knows that he has to let go of that influence so I can gain that influence. And that's a hard thing to do. That's a hard thing to do. I would liken it to the guys running the marathon race and they're passing the baton. Right, and you drop the baton, you lose the race immediately. You're done. The race is over. And what happens is the one guy wants to hold on to the baton for just a little bit longer than he should have. And the guy who's trying to get the baton can't get it then. And the baton ends up falling. And in this case and on this point, the baton is influence. Is influence. As the man stepping out and ending, you need him to begin to influence the people. And as the man who's stepping in, you need your predecessor to be letting go of influence. A friend of mine who pastors in Ohio, Brother Hobbins, I think you know him, his predecessor sits on the front row, right at the corner, on the front thing, still conducts the same Bible class he always has conducted, and is literally a thorn in his successor's flesh because he's not letting go of the influence. And he's a great man. He is a great man, and he has a lot to offer the church. But he's not helping the guy who he said was supposed to take over after him. He's not helping by doing that. The best thing that man can do is disappear for 6 months and then come back, and the people would love him. The people would care for him. The people would shower him with gifts. And I know the man who's his successor. He would appreciate all that influence he would give him. But as you step out, your influence changes. It has to adjust for the guy coming behind you to be successful. Here we go. Third and final point. Recognition during the transition. This is to the guy who is now beginning. The man has come to the end of his influence and ministry, and now as you step in, as you are beginning, just by way of introduction on this point, I would tell you, walk humbly. Walk humbly. Don't assume that simply because there is a title, simply because there is a position, simply because there's now a really big desk and you have a great office, don't assume that automatically that loyalty and that love will be given. That loyalty and that love is earned. It's earned. And a mistake a lot of guys make that step into ministry is they assume that the guy who's been there for 35 years and the way that people loved him and cared for him, that it ought to be given right to him as well. And there are some people that are spiritually mature enough to be able to do that. And he's the pastor now, and we follow him. But there's a lot of people who aren't. There's a lot of people who aren't. And they, in there, we talked about the very beginning, they're in this period of confusion, this frustration. There's this turmoil from their jobs and from all these other types of situations and relationships and families and economy. And so now this happening in church where this is supposed to be the one place that's stable. And so now here's this transitioning happening. Don't think that they can just flip the switch and they're going to give you the same type of loyalty. Loyal people will be loyal. They will be. You have to give it time. You have to give it time. So how do we do that? First of all, focus on people first. Focus on people first. One of the toughest things about transitioning into a ministry is we have so many ideas, so many visions, so many plans, so many dreams of what might and could and should and would happen if. And what we don't allow is we don't allow time for people to just to fall in love with us. And I admit that there are some things that maybe the guy who's transitioning out, maybe there are some things we can do different, but maybe we can do those different things after the first month, right? Maybe after the first week, we can start to make some changes, right? Give people time to make those changes. Give them time to have that loyalty transition over to you and develop over to you. And I'm at a distinct advantage because I grew up in the church that I pastor now. And so a lot of times what happens is that you step into a church and they don't really know you. You've only been there a few years. And so anytime you want to change something or do something different, they feel the need to sit down with you and tell you why they've never done that before, right? And so let me tell you 15 reasons why we've never had a children's program on Wednesday nights, right? And that was our ministry. Our ministry never had a children's program on Wednesday night. Brother Mattingly liked to have all the kids in the service on Wednesday night, which, great, he's the pastor. I supported while I was there as a student. I supported while I was there as a staff member, but that's not what I want to do. I wanted to have a kids program on Wednesday night. And so the advantage I have over maybe some of you is that the people know that I realize we haven't ever had a children's program on Wednesday night before. Okay? They don't feel the need to come and tell me why we don't. And so they can trust the transition that happens. And within the first 4 months of pastorate. I was voted in December the 3rd, the first week in January, we started Master Clubs program on Wednesday nights for our children. And our people loved it. There's another guy who pastors about 45 minutes south of us, and it's a good church. They got really good people. He's been there for 3 years, and they still don't have a children's program on Wednesday night. The people just, they don't understand why he wants to take the kids out of the church. And so he's constantly trying to help the people understand and bring him, lead them along. And he tells me, he says, Dave, if I started a children's program on Wednesday night, it would split my church. It would split my church. They're not ready yet. And when you transition in, if you're not careful, you just focus on ministry, start this, vision, dreams, plans, all this stuff. And they just might not be ready. And so don't focus on necessarily the ministry and the plans and the dreams, but focus on the people. Focus on the people. Be hospitable. Take them out. Greet them. Write notes. Have them over to your house. That's one of the best things that we've done in our ministry. Is we've had literally almost every person in our church over to our house on Sunday afternoon. It's the only way I can get a good Sunday afternoon meal. Maybe my wife, she'll just warm up pizza if I'm not bringing people over to the house. And so I'm kidding. I'm sorry. And but we bring them through. And you'd be surprised at how many people walk out of the door and go, "This is unbelievable to be at your house." You know. It's really not that impressive, just to be honest with you. And the food really wasn't all that spectacular. But to them, that was everything. And you know the people who come over to my house the most? If I walked into my church on Sunday and I said, "Hey, I want to do this and change this here and move this service," boom, boom, boom. They'd line up. They'd do it in a heartbeat. You know why? Because they know that I'm not focused on having this ministry started. I'm focused on helping them. And so focus on people. I just simply would reiterate, build relationships. We went and visited a few of our elderly folks, and we'd go by and we'd see them, and you're shocked at how many of your of the deacons in the church haven't ever had a visit from the pastor. And you're shocked at how many of the staff members haven't had a visit. How many of the core church leadership. You got people who've been teaching Sunday school for 20 years, and so they don't have anybody come and visit them. They always go and make the visit. It's shocking sometimes. And you show up at the house and knock on the door, "Hey, how you doing? You know, what are you doing here? Just come talk to you." You know, and like, that goes miles in people's minds. That goes miles. And you start to build that love and that affection. Your predecessor, that's how he got their loyalty and love. Because that's what he did. That's how he won it over. And so if you want to win that loyalty, that love, that influence over, those are the kinds of things you have to do too. And transitioning in, sometimes what we do is we make the mistake of thinking, well, if we change this program, if we added that, and if we did this, then the church would really grow. But really, if we just focused on what the church is really supposed to be about, and it's supposed to be about helping people. And if we just focus on helping people, then in time, everything else will come. Second, I'd say tag your mentors. Find those few trusted men who you know, who you love. Find your mentors. With me, I call them the inner circle. That's what we call them. It's cheap. It's generic. It's a retarded title. Okay, I understand. But I couldn't come up with anything better. All right? You come up with something better, email it to me, then I'll use it. Okay? And but it's this inner circle. It's about five men in our church. One of them is on staff. Two of them are deacons. And the other two are just laymen in the church, just key leaders. And it's just me and them five. And we just meet pretty much weekly. We try to do it weekly. We don't always get it done every week. But it's just me and them. And I talk to them, those five men. Some of them are ultra-successful businessmen. Some of them just common labor, blue-collar factory guys. And we talk about everything. Everything. I don't not talk to them about anything. If this happened here and this happened there, here's what I'm dealing with there, here's this person, here's this concern, what do you think about that? What should we tell these? And they're not deacons, they're not a committee, they're just men that I can count on and trust and bounce ideas off of. That's the best thing I've done. That's the best thing I've done. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes I walk into a deacon's meeting and I want to bang my head against the wall because nobody says anything. You know, they just sit there and listen. And that's frustrating to me. I want information back. I want to know, okay, where, tell me what you're thinking. Tell me where we're at. Is the church ready for this? You're supposed to be the voice of the church to me and then the voice of me to the church. Help me, you know. And, you know, they just stare, you know. These five guys, when I sit down with these five guys, we talk about it all. We talk about it all. We've cried together. We've laughed together. We've prayed together. We've praised together. We've done all, just us five. And I'd say, tag your mentors. Find those people that those are guys you're going to run to when it gets tough, when it gets difficult, when it gets hard. And let them in. Let them in. Let those five, or however many it is for you, let them in. Not just mentors, I'd say, in your ministry, but find your mentors out of your ministry. Find those men who you want to pattern your ministry after. And when you're transitioning in, nothing is more beneficial than that. Nothing is more. And I tell our church often, Brother Mike Norris has been a huge counselor for me. Many of you know Brother Norris there at Franklin Road. The church he took over and began pastoring is very similar to mine. And there was a lot of things that he went through when I first started. One of the best phrases he gave me was, dinosaurs turn slowly. Dinosaurs turn slowly. And he's been a huge counselor to me of just incorporating change and how to move things and take your time and be slow and find men. And then let your church family know you've sought counsel. I was talking to so-and-so the other day on the phone. I called Brother Norris the other day on the phone. I emailed Brother Chapel the other day, and here's what he sent me back. And I let our church family know that all the time. I want them to know that I'm getting counsel. I want them to know that I'm not just making rash, random decisions, but, man, I'm getting counsel from men who, in their minds, they're going to go, okay, okay. If he thought that was a good idea, then that's okay. And then our pastor's not so weird, right? And there's that trust factor that's developed. So find your mentors. Next, I'd say be crystal clear. You remember when you were a kid and your mom used to tell you honesty is the best policy? That's still true. Okay, honesty is the best policy. Okay, I'll just leave that. Next one, leave the legacy intact. And I'll end with this. Leave the legacy intact. Here's one of the most difficult things that someone transitioning into a ministry has to deal with is you start to uncover a desk full of stuff, right? And Lord willing for you, it's not sin, it's not mismanagement of money, it's not ungodly, it's not unethical, okay? Some friends of mine have been there, and those aren't pretty places to be, okay? And so Lord willing for you, when you start to get into the office of the pastor, and you start to find out all this stuff, it's not anything that's detrimental in those ways. And it hasn't been for me. But you do uncover stuff. You know? Okay, well, he made that decision. And there's always that guy who wants to come and say, well, remember when he made this decision? This is not the way I would have made the decision. What about you? And my standard answer every time is, I wasn't the one who had to make the decision. God wasn't going to tell me. God was going to tell him. You know? I can't question what decision he made. It wasn't my place to know. Well, don't you think it was a bad idea doing it? I have no idea if that was a good idea or a bad idea. At that time, I voted yes for it as a member of the church, just like you did. And I loved my pastor, and I followed him, you know. And if we ever come to that crossroad again, we'll reexamine things. But, man, let's just leave the legacy intact. You have nothing to gain by tearing down your predecessor. You have nothing to gain. Brother Mattingly had been there for 37 years. There are people in that church who think Brother Mattingly hung the moon, okay? And you know the best thing I can do is tell them that he hung the moon, right? Even though I'm dealing with all the stuff that he didn't hang the moon on, right? Okay, that's the best thing you can do. That's the best thing any of us stepping into a ministry can do and ought to be doing. Leave the legacy intact. Don't shoot just because you can. Don't shoot just because you can. That's not going to be beneficial. It's not going to help. Talk positive talk positive about him. When Brother Manley comes, he's not there very often, but when he is in church, we always recognize him. Always, Brother Manley here with us. Stand up, Brother Manley, amen. We're glad that he's in church. Always recognize him. Always, every time, every time. I want that little old lady who he led to the Lord 25 years ago, who sits there, I want her to go, man, my preacher, he sure does love my old preacher. That makes me love him even more. You know, and what happens is, gentlemen, is sometimes as we begin something and we transition in, we develop our own insecurities. And, well, there's Brother Madley's in church, and there I saw him talking to Brother so-and-so and Sister so-and-so, and he's probably talking about me and what a terrible job I'm doing. You know, nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. He transitioned out because he knew you were God's guy for the job, and if he didn't know that, he wouldn't have transitioned out, I promise you. And if he is talking to somebody in the back of the church, I promise you, it's uplifting you and raising your arms and supporting you and helping you. And what you have got to do is be comfortable in your own skin. Be comfortable in who God made you and the leader God made you, and don't take pot shots.